It's Helping Hand, weekly feature statewide on HPR1 stations every Friday, part of our afternoon drive broadcast of All Things Considered, and then the segments are archived online at hawaiipublicradio.org, where you can find them afterwards. Every week, Helping Hand puts a spotlight on an organization, topic, or event that offers assistance to people with disabilities and people and animals who are among the most vulnerable. I'm Dave Lawrence, and this week we are thrilled to have a returning guest joining us, a new guest from a returning organization would be a better way of describing it. It is the Hawaii State Chapter of Children's Justice Centers. There are five of the CJCs, as they are called, across the Aloha State. And they assist with some very difficult things, child abuse investigations. They're child-friendly facilities where law enforcement, child protection, prosecution, mental health, medical and victim advocacy, all of it comes together under one roof to support a child victim who has been through something extraordinarily traumatic and try to help them on a road towards healing. And also, holding the offenders accountable. We're going to learn about the services they offer and how we can support this organization that deals with a particularly vulnerable population in the state. Our new guest from this returning organization is their chapter coordinator for the Hawaii State Chapter of Children's Justice Centers. It's a long name. Bethany Stetson. Hey, Bethany, great to have you. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, and you did great.
I appreciate it. And first, before we hear about your mission, explain what this organization is to you and how you found yourself doing this.
Yeah, so the Hawaii State Chapter of Children's Justice Centers, I'll dive in a little bit more on the details of how the CJCs work and everything we do statewide, but I'm really honored to be a part of this organization. I actually heard about the Hawaii State Chapter's work through Helping Hands and the initial broadcast last year, so I'm really excited to be working with the chapter, but yeah.
And that's really interesting that you heard it on Helping Hand. And you're a public radio listener?
I am.
Wow, isn't that cool?
I know.
And so child abuse and neglect is, it's a state, and you guys are statewide, so as we said, five of these facilities across the state. In terms that you can describe it with statistics and so forth, how big of an issue is child abuse and neglect in this state? Is it bigger than other places? And if you can't answer that, just dial in on how much of it is going on.
Yeah, it's difficult to put a number to child abuse in what we're seeing statewide versus nationally. It's hard to differentiate because so much of abuse is done in secret, and it's really difficult for kids to find that courage to disclose what's happening to them.
It's not always documented, too.
Exactly. It's actually, they found only about 10% of abuse is actually disclosed in child abuse situations. So it really is just a small number of abuse that is talked about and seen and known. So to differentiate between nationally and here in the Aloha State, it's kind of hard to say. But we do know nationally that about one in four girls and one in six boys will experience some type of abuse. There's different numbers out there, but on average, that's what we see.
And the caseload is another way to figure this out sometimes.
Yeah.
So how many calls do you get a week?
A week, it's hard to say, but every year, CWS here in Hawaii gets about 3,700 calls for referrals. So not cases that have been proved, but people calling with suspicions and just concerns about abuse taking place.
3,700.
Yes.
Separate calls.
Yes.
Of potentially 3,700 suspicious instances.
Yes.
Or 3,700 people.
Yeah, exactly. And so our centers, to differentiate between just any call that would come into CWS, our centers typically deal with felony level cases. So those are cases of serious neglect or abuse and sexual abuse. And every year we have about 1,000 children that come to our centers to get an interview. So that's pretty stable every year, is about 1,000 kids.
Wow. That's pretty heavy. And that's felony level child abuse. And by the time they get to you, it's been in court, and so these are real. By the time this 1,000 is not suspected incidents, these are real. These are actual incidents.
They are suspected. So this
and they're still suspected.
Yeah. So this is during cases of. So if let's say someone calls because a child has disclosed abuse to them, or they're concerned about something happening, they've seen a child. Maybe they're a teacher in school, and their child suddenly is acting differently in class, and they call just because they're concerned, a case will be opened, and so that's either with child welfare or law enforcement. And that in that process of seeing if this is actually a serious issue, if abuse is actually taking place, an interview is necessary. So that's where the interview takes place. And it's really a unique, really, really important role in the community and in serving victims of crime.
Because to get this case forward, that critical interview has to get certain facts together, create a picture of a very difficult situation that has occurred. And so you're saying obtaining those interviews requires some real professional skill.
Yeah, without a Children's Justice Center. So this is a national service model we base our work on here in Hawaii. And without a Children's Justice Center in a community, a child might have to tell one of the most traumatic events of their life over and over again to different people, to people who might not know what they're asking and could ask leading questions or confusing questions. And we find the more and more a child tells that story, it's more likely that details can get, messed up or confused. So we have trained forensic interviewers at each of our CJCs, people who are specifically trained to interview children in cases of abuse. And so a child is interviewed once, that interview is recorded, so law enforcement and anyone involved in the case that needs it has access to it. And the child is then connected to whatever services they need, mental health, medical services, the family can get connected with a family advocate, just so that as they start that process to healing, they have the resources they need. So it's a really important role that the CJCs play in our community.
And that interview, so when you guys set up to book that interview, it's done in a way that this is going to be the interview that gathers the evidence. So this is going to be a police-sanctioned official interview that will include whatever questions they need. And so that interviewer is in law enforcement or is the official representative of them at that moment?
So, yeah, sometimes we do have FBI that have their own interviews come in, but typically it's just done by our in-house state judiciary forensic interviewers. And law enforcement can actually watch the interview on a two-way window. So they are usually involved in the process, but the interview is being done by someone who's an employee of the CJC.
Okay. But it is the interview that's going to be used in court.
Yep, exactly.
For the evidence to prosecute the offender.
Yep.
That's interesting. And so it's usually HPD that are watching through the glass or more FBI? I'm curious why FBI?
We do have cases. So if there's a case, I don't know all the details. Because I'm with the chapter, I work more on like a higher view level. But from what I understand, so cases of human trafficking, which does occur of children and youth, the FBI will typically be involved in those cases. In cases that are done where abuse may have occurred on the ocean or in the air, where it's not a jurisdiction of the, on land, that is something unique to our state where that is possible. So there's a number of reasons why it could be pornography, child pornography.
Okay.
It just depends on the kind of
crime that was committed.
Yeah, crime, exactly. Yeah, but typically it's HPD.
Okay, and then occasionally FBI.
In Oahu, and then the county police department, depending on which island it is.
Wow, that's interesting. But occasionally the FBI is in there too.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Wow. And so, is there, and then you don't have to answer this because it's a personal question, is there any interesting story as to what drove you? Because you're obviously very passionate.
Yeah. So I became a mom a year and a half ago. And I think for any new parent, there are so many things that just pregnancy, everything, it's scary. And you think there's all sorts of unknowns. And you just realize how little control you have over this tiny person's life that you love so much. And I think when I became a mom, I'd always been passionate about the rights of kids and the vulnerable and oppressed, but even more so after having my own son, just how important it is for parents to have the resources to be good stewards of this little person that they have in their care. And so I think that really drives me to do what I do, to be an advocate, because a lot of times the trauma that kids experience, they're so resilient and they can recover from it. It's just if they had a trusted adult. I think one of the biggest indicators they found in a child recovering and living a successful life after being abused is a supportive mother, having that mom. That's a really, and just any parent, but it's so important for parents and adults that are in kids' lives to just know what to do if abuse occurs, because it does occur.
No question. And yeah, it's some powerful stuff there. So how do you guys get your, in addition to people right now who are listening can make contributions, of course, and I'll have the contact information in a moment, but how are you guys funded?
Yeah, so our CJCs are funded through state and federal grants and funding. So as I shared, I may have not made clear, but our children's justice centers here in Hawaii are state judiciary. So they're a part of the state, and so they receive a lot of funding through state sources. They receive funding through the Hawaii State Chapter, which is what I work for. We receive federal grants to support them in their work. And then they also have the Friends of the Children's Justice Centers, who are an integral part of the chapter, and we work together with them in supporting the work that we do statewide with the centers. And they are able to provide unrestricted funds to do whatever it is that the centers might want to do that might not be supported, be able to be supported by the state.
Yeah, we've had Paul on.
Yeah, Paul Tonneson.
Yeah, he's a wonderful guy, and and yeah, it's a lot of funding that they can provide, and obviously, and you guys get a small percent. You guys get some money from private donations from people.
Yes, yeah. So we do, and we're trying to build that. We would love to be able to expand some of our prevention work, which could be supported through private donations.
Well, let's talk about that. So what people can make donations to the organization and to help expand some of that work. Talk about what if people were making those donations, what additional services you'd be able to expand?
Yeah, so right now we're really, so our focus as the chapter is to really make sure that there's excellent resources in our state for people, for the professionals that are working in these cases, and that kids have the resources that they need to be protected and also to heal if they have experienced abuse. And so if people are donating to the Hawaii State Chapter, that's going towards bringing in speakers and supporting trainings from people nationally. So bringing in nationally recognized speakers and trainers to support our law enforcement, the people that are working in child welfare services or family advocates, so those professionals that are working in child abuse cases. But it would also go towards supporting prevention and outreach work that we really would like to see expanded. There's been a lot of work to create or to adopt Aaron's Law here in the state, and that would mandate some sort of body safety talk discussion in classrooms, but that's not something that is required in our classrooms right now. So just getting the information out there to kids about body safety, things like that, we really want to see those that work supported in our state at a statewide level.
Are there ways people can volunteer?
Yeah, so on a local level, if they want to support their local center, the Friends of the Children's Justice Centers each have, so there's on Big Island, there's two. There's one on East Hawaii and one in West Hawaii, and they each have a Friends of the Children's Justice Center, Oahu, Maui, and Kauai. They all have Friends of the Children's Justice Centers that support those local centers, and they have lots of ways to volunteer. I'm personally volunteering for the Oahu Children's Friends of the Children's Justice Center this Christmas season to purchase gifts for kids that have been in the center this year. And so we get to go out and buy Christmas gifts that they personally requested. We don't know their names. We just know their age and their gender. But that's just simple ways throughout the year. There are different things we can do to support them.
So you're saying that folks who are listening who wanted to help can call and reach out to you guys and say, I want to buy gifts for these kids.
Help, yeah.
Let me do that too. And
yeah.
They'll tell you some stuff that you guys
yeah.
need.
Yeah, there's definitely opportunities throughout the year. And then for supporting the chapter, yeah, you can totally get in touch with us. Visit our website. We have Instagram and Facebook too if you want to get connected. But we would love, I personally would love to connect with people who are interested in working with us. If you're hearing what we're doing and it resonates with you, we want to get connected with you, even if it's not monetary donations, but if it's just you have knowledge, you have resources that you want to share with us to keep our keiki free from harm, we want to be connected with you.
And for folks, if they have a concern and they think that a kid is getting abused, it's a real, because there are a lot of other there are different organizations we've had several on that do similar, that try to help and can be both advocates for kids and like Parents Inc., they run some programs mm-hmm. that they're mandated to run mm-hmm. to try to help people of all levels to recover from this. So if somebody has a concern and they're worried about a kid, obviously you can call 911. Is that the best thing to do, or what? Because that puts you right in touch, but you're working with this. What do you suggest?
So I think the first and foremost, the most important thing for people to know is it's never your job to prove that abuse is taking place. There's any suspicion, any concern, that's enough to make a report. And so the first step would actually be contacting CWS. They have a child abuse hotline. I can provide those numbers to you, but they are just easily accessible. If you Google CWS Hawaii reporting, it will show up what numbers to call. Once you start that process, it's completely anonymous. You don't need to worry about your name getting out there as the person who reported it. It's really important that if there's any suspicion, any concerns, that it's reported. And like I said, it's not your job to prove it. So you don't have to have the evidence. You can let investigators do their job. That's what they're trained to do. So, yeah, it's really important to make those reports.
So when people call you, what is it? It's not that. It's how do you get these 3,700 reports?
So that's through Child Welfare Services.
So they hand them off to you. So those 3,700 have already come into the authorities. Mm-hmm. Then the authorities turn around to you and say, here's another one.
And that's something I do want to point out, is that we cannot provide the services. Our centers cannot provide the services that they provide unless a report is made to law enforcement or CWS.
So it starts there.
Yeah, it starts there. And that's why as a chapter, we're a little bit unique, because we're not state judiciary. We're not bound by the same laws that they have. So that's why we want to do prevention effort and sort of catching the people before they come to centers. Right. But we cannot help a child unless the centers cannot help kids unless they've first been reported to authorities.
Here's how to help this organization. HawaiiCJC.org. Bethany@HawaiiCJC.org. The full interview, the radio feature, and all their contact information and all of our other Helping Hand guests can be found at HawaiiPublicRadio.org. Just look for Helping Hand in the pull-down menu. Other aspects of what you're doing that I've failed to bring up that you want to get out there?
I think just to point out, like, what the chapter does, we work on a statewide level. So we're supporting our centers. We're supporting the uniting the friends and the centers together as a collaborative statewide network. So it's really, there's a far reach in the work that we do. And like I said before, we're looking for people who want to support that reach and want to see kids not only met their needs met once abuse has happened, but for us to prevent it and do what we can to stop it before it does.
And you have a lot of ways people can help you, so it doesn't have to be a monetary donation. If you've been touched by what Bethany's been talking about, get in touch with them. She's chapter coordinator, Hawaii State Chapter of Children's Justice Centers, and working with some extraordinarily vulnerable folks in the Aloha State who've been through abuse and tough situations. On behalf of all those cases you're trying to help out, obviously very heavy duty job that you guys are doing, and thanks for doing it. Thanks for helping out people who don't know who else to call and who've been through something so traumatic. I really do appreciate it, and it's an honor to have you guys on Helping Hand.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.